Greg, let's talk a little bit also about, and I want you to give us some examples of how this all works, but what's the science behind this?
Well, the science in terms of the existence of the field or how it works, or both?
Both.
Well, this is the reason I've written the book the way I have, George. The first part of the book tells us of the science. Some of it's so new it's not even in textbooks yet. The experiments that were done in the late 90s, for example, University of Geneva in Switzerland, Nicholas Gizen, where they were showing where they would take a particle, a quantum particle, split it in half so that each half was identical to the other. They had essentially twins. And they fired those particles in opposite directions from one another, 7 miles in one direction, 7 miles in the other. So they were 14 miles apart. And this gave them the opportunity to do these experiments that just astounded everyone. What they found was when they would disturb one of those particles on one end of the experiment, the other one, 14 miles away, acted like it was the one that was having the experience, as if they were still connected, even though they weren't. And in some cases, the connection was happening so quickly, it was traveling faster than the speed of light. So they knew that it wasn't one particle signaling another, that somehow they're actually connected, and the term that's used now is entangled. And this is a brilliant man, Dean Radin, now has a new book out, Entangled Minds, where he's talking about this phenomenon of entanglement. And there's another principle that comes in here that I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of a holographic principle. And the holographic principle essentially is the principle that it suggests that when we have a little fragment of something, that little fragment mirrors the whole something. So for example, if we were to take a few years ago back in the 80s, there were these shiny holographic bookmarks. You'd hold them in the light, and the image would look like it was floating above your hand.
All right.
And if anybody has these, you can do an experiment, but you can only do it once because you'll destroy your bookmark. You can cut that little bookmark into about a bajillion pieces, George, and you can take the smallest one and even cut it in half again. And if it's truly holographic, when you hold it under a magnifier, that little fragment, no matter what shape it is, you'll see the entire image in that shape, because that is the definition of a hologram. The whole is always reproduced in every fragment, no matter how small. And this is important because scientists believe, people like David Bohm and Carl Pribram, believe that our universe is holographic and that we are part of that. And the beauty of a hologram, and this is why it's so powerful in the universe, is because every piece reflects every other piece. When a change is made in one place, that change is mirrored everywhere else. And that is believed to be the reason why those particles separated by 14 miles. The question is, it's a trick question. I ask our live audiences, I say, if they're separated by 14 miles, how did the signal that one particle was being disturbed reach the other one 14 miles away so quickly? How did that signal get there, or did it? And this is the trick. The signal doesn't have to travel. It's already there because it is entangled. And because of the holographic nature, the signal doesn't go anywhere. It's already everywhere all the time. This is why remote viewing works the way it works. When our consciousness moves, the language we use is that our consciousness moves from point A to point B. The truth is we simply tune our consciousness into that place, but we're not really going anywhere. And this is the power of this principle in our lives. When we can feel the feeling as if peace has happened in a woman's body, and her body mirrors that halfway across the room, and we can see it through the ultrasound, we know that principle works. And this is why, if our listeners are listening, I know people out there, you've got loved ones in the battlefield of Iraq, half a world away, and you say, when I feel my prayer for my loved one, how does my prayer reach them on the other side of the earth? And the answer is, when you create that prayer in your heart, it's already there. You don't have to ship your prayer off anywhere. You can use your energy to feel the feeling as if your loved one is safe and as if they're already healed, so that the field can mirror that back to you. And that's the power of this field, the way it works. And these are some examples, some of the experiments. We know the field is out there because of the way the experiments are working. And then I shared earlier in the evening, we know that when we have certain kinds of emotions, we're affecting that field through those emotions. So that's what the science is showing us. Anecdotally, we've always heard about indigenous people creating rainstorms over their village, or the miraculous healings, such as the one I described in the Medicineless Hospital, or a number of people feeling peace in the Middle East. And while they were feeling that peace, all that could happen was peace. But the question is, and this is what scientists ask, George, they say, if this is so powerful, why is it that when the experiments stop, all those statistics reverse? When those practitioners in the Middle East stop feeling peace, why did all the statistics reverse and the terrorist activities begin again? And this is the crux of the irony that was left to us in those ancient texts, because what they described is this feeling isn't something that we do every once in a while when we want to change the world. It is something that we become. And we can hold these feelings throughout the day. It's not something that we stop and do for a few minutes in a prayer or meditation, and then we get up and leave, and the prayer or meditation is over. If the abbot in the monastery in Tibet, he said to us, he said, feeling is a prayer. There's no words, no outward expression. A feeling is the prayer. Well, we're feeling in every moment of every day, so we're essentially in prayer. This is a modality of prayer, every moment of every day. And if that's true, we can feel that peace or that healing to some degree when we're driving down the freeway to work or in our office place or, at the family dinner table to the best of our ability. That is our workshop in life, to feel those feelings, even though the world around us may not always support or seem to support what it is that we're feeling.
Well, I was going to say, what are the practical ways then to use this in our day-to-day living?
Well, I know there are many modalities of prayer, and I've done programs on Coast to Coast where we've talked about these before. And what I'd like to say is that every mode of prayer is valid. It works. We all use them. Some prayers are called prayers of supplication, where we feel powerless. And we ask for help. We say, dear God, help me out here, Archangel Michael or whoever it is that's out there. And that's one way of looking at the world. This is another way of looking at the world, knowing that we are part of everything that we see, and because of that, we're part of the solution, and that we don't have to ask for help because we are the help. We may participate, as John Wheeler says. We may communicate with this intelligent field to bring about this outcome of healing or peace or abundance in our lives or whatever it is. The key is, and this is easier said than done, I know it is, because of our conditioning here in the West. The key is to feel the feelings as if our heart's desire or our prayer or what it is that we're choosing to experience has already happened, to feel as if the healing is already there in our loved ones, or if the peace has already happened at the family dinner table in our communities, to give that field. Remember, we're programs within this massive consciousness computer of the universe. So we've got to give that field something to work with.